Savoyard is an American city planner and urban designer, theorist, consultant, academic, and author. He works as a professor of city planning for San Diego State University in the School of Public Affairs and has authored articles in the emerging field of livability ethics. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider, an internationally recognized leader in urban development and planning, advisor and author. Find earlier chats in this series by looking for Pacific Conversations wherever you find good podcasts or check out the website edtalks.com.au.
Welcome, Bruce Appleyard. Now, that name is very familiar for me. I don't know if I saw you in the halls of Berkeley when you were a child. I'm sure I did. But your father and I actually had offices next to one another. And we spent a lot of time together over lunch and stuff. Your father definitely made a great contribution to what I would call urban science, not just planning. A great scholar, and now the apple does not fall far from the tree. Pun intended. Well, Bruce Appleyard, tell me about yourself. Where'd you go to university, and what'd you study, and that kind of stuff?
You probably definitely saw me running through the halls, coming to get my father in the evenings to get him to come home for dinner. And so I was there often.
I know you were there. I remember kid running around all the time, but
some little toddler. That's right.
Yeah.
And I knew my dad was doing some cool stuff with some cool colleagues. So that spurred me on to do what I do now. I'm an associate professor at San Diego State University, where I teach urban design and city planning. And I grew up in Berkeley, went to the Berkeley Public Schools. I went to Cal as an undergrad. I also got my master's at the College of Environmental Design, and then I finished my PhD up there right in 2010. And it's really great to be with you.
So how'd you get to San Diego State?
Oh, I was just hired from after I finished my PhD at Berkeley, and was brought on by the crew at the School of Public Affairs. And it's a great group of colleagues and a great group of students. I'm teaching a class right now called The Urban Scene, where I have students go out and do really masterful street walking and people watching. And it's
sounds like
it's
Alan
really,
Jacobs.
It's a great, that's right. It is a little bit of Alan Jacobs, looking at cities, William White, my father's work. And it's a great community to be a part of and a great city, a great binational city to work in.
Excellent. What's your general work on? Is it streets or how do you characterize your scholarship?
I would say streets, placemaking, built environment, and travel behavior. Right now, I'm actually starting a really interesting research project where I've been working on it for the past year, where I'm working on working with homeless folks and having them map their environment. So to map their everyday lives. So a good sort of Kevin Lynch style thing where I'm capturing, you know, where do they get their food? Where do they go to the bathroom? Where do they get their needs met? What do they do for, you know, a lot of folks have little work that they do to keep things, to keep themselves going. And it's really been a great research project. So again, sort of following the lines of Kevin Lynch and my father in terms of this sort of image mapping.
Are you doing it in San Diego or all over?
Doing it in San Diego, Los Angeles, and Carlsbad.
Carlsbad? Why Carlsbad?
Well, I just, I had a really great group of researchers, and one of the researchers during the pandemic was up in Carlsbad. So that's
Okay. Okay. But now you've just finished a book. Is this your first book?
I wrote the transportation land use connection with Terry Moore and Paul Thorsness. Mm-hmm. So this, I would say this is, yes, my first big book.
All right.
And I'll have to say it was like, you know, it was an update to my father's book. It's about twice as long as the book is now. So it was kind of like editing the Bible and then writing the New Testament.
Okay.
It's such a
Which was that, Peter or Paul?
Oh, that's right. It's Bruce and Company.
Bruce and Company. All right. With the title of the book.
The book is titled "Livable Streets 2.0," and carrying forth, you know, it's a reboot of my father's original book, "Livable Streets."
Yes.
Published in 1981. And sadly, he was killed by a speeding drunk driver a year later, and the book was never reprinted. And I kept having people ask me for a copy of the book or how they could get a copy. And I found out that it was often getting stolen out of libraries. So it was easy for me to convince Elsevier, the publisher, that an update was needed. And
An update is really needed because Lynch and your father and Jacobs have been the common stream in streets, and
yes,
how we should make great streets. So tell me how and what your basic principles are in the book and how we could learn from them. And particularly now, the pandemic, streets need to be remade.
Yep.
In an era which the car has taken them over the street.
And absolutely, and reimagined. And I think the real important in my work on the update, I asked a lot of questions about the importance of the work. And what's really important about the work is that it talks about how streets are for people, and I would add for our humanity. And it was really the first book to really make that case, and really through the graphics of its research, it really showed how traffic had an invisible harm on neighborhoods and community and community cohesion. And I have also recast the book somewhat to capture some of the essence of the different parts. And the main parts are conflict, power, and promise. So conflict, the conflict in the first part of the book is about all the research we have about the invisible harms of traffic on people. That's the conflict, that's the drama and the tension and the conflict between people and cars. Power, part two, focusing on power, is really about the power relations between cars and people, and also the political power relations in getting streets remade for people. And how do we actually, the whole process of, you know, catalysts and arbiters and beneficiaries and opponents, all these players in the sort of the drama of recreating streets and reimagining streets. And then the third part, promise, is about how do we actually realize the promise of our streets? How do we actually remake them, reimagine them, replan them so that they can actually work for people and all modes of traffic? And one of the big, all modes of travel. And one of the big things that I've brought to the fore with in part three is a stronger emphasis on bicycling, pedestrians, and building on my father's work on traffic calming.
Now this is, of course, very apropos to today.
Yes.
The pandemic has sharpened every one of the things you've talked about.
Yes.
And I'd like you to go through how you see that sharpening. I have my view, but you're the expert.
Yes. Well, I would say that the pandemic has really shown us the importance of things that are close to each other and of local actions, mm-hmm. and you know, really sort of localizing where people are traveling and spending their time. And also, I think kind of also turning us towards the street and the public space that streets are, and our need for placemaking, accommodation, whether it's to walk, to spend time, to relax with friends. And what's been really great to see is how many places have reimagine the parking spaces to accommodate people sitting outside, engaging in social activity, eating, enjoying the outside. And actually it's really gone far to reimagine street space in this along the lines of the book.
One of the things that I enjoyed, is the street space becoming now the dining space.
Yes.
Redwood City. They closed the street and put those platforms out, and the waiters, and for the pandemic, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Now have outdoor space.
One of the terms I love is streeteries.
Streeteries, yes.
Streeteries, yes.
And yeah, I hope we can do some of that here in Sydney. But some of the, give me some examples of how the streets are coming alive now, post-pandemic.
Right. Well, I think that we've had a lot of streets being closed off, parklets being formed, the canopies that have been created to give people shelter. And I think, but there's also been a lot of great things that people have done for bicycle travel, protected bike lanes, closing off streets and creating greenways and bike boulevards. So there's a lot of, I think a lot of people also really took to bicycling during the pandemic as well, and saw the street spaces as, an important activity space for them to travel and also get exercise.
One of the things I enjoy in Portland, where you are now, is then parking the cars outside the space where the cars used to be. And that car creates a barrier of other cars running into you while you're riding your bike.
Yes, it's reprioritizing the street space so that the cars on the outside, people are inside. There's sort of a nice kind of hierarchy that Livable Streets and my father talked about. It was one of the first to really talk about the hierarchy of pedestrians, bicyclists, transit, and then motor cars.
And so are there been any, now I live in Santiago, Chile, and I worked there for a number of years. One of the things we did one Sunday was close off several streets and made kind of a road race for kids on skateboards and so on. That is now a thing. Every Sunday, every neighborhood tries to close off some of its streets and they bring food.
Yes, no, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, streets
are— Something going on in the US now?
I think there are some places that are doing it. And I think that, I think it's something we really need to adopt, especially in places like San Diego, where we recapture streets. I mean, streets make up about 2/3 of our public spaces. So if we can actually remake them and reimagine them, we've done a lot to create a whole new environment, a whole new urban environment for our citizens.
And what's the first move? Is it closing a street or putting a bump on it? Or what are the first moves? And urban,
well, I think,
commercial streets versus residential streets. How do you do that?
Right. Well, I think the sort of the story you're telling drivers is really important. So you can really start, I think I always try to think about the low cost kind of tactical urbanism approach, which part of the book, there's a nice section contributed by Mike Lydon about tactical urbanism and how we can actually do things with, fairly effective with potted plants, bulbs, signage and paint. And of course we could talk about the Berkeley example, where, and a big part of the book actually focuses on the barriers that were put up in Berkeley back in 1974. So, and they were temporary treatments. Sometimes there's nothing more permanent than a temporary treatment.
That's right.
and they survived 2 voter referenda. And they basically, the idea was to create environmental areas in the gridded flatlands of Berkeley, and protected a lot of those areas from a lot of the pass-through traffic that was heading to as my father would say, Berkeley was like a sieve and traffic was falling through the neighborhoods. So we can actually use, low-cost planners, paint, signage, and to start telling a new story to drivers. And then we can start things like bulb outs, to help elevate the profile of the pedestrian. We can start doing bike lanes and protected bike lanes. And then we can start going to creating bike boulevards. So those are the things I would think about.
How do you deal, and this is my problem here in Sydney, with the damn bus companies?
Yep.
Who don't want any change in the street because it means they can't do their bus stop. How do you deal with the bus?
Right. That's a good question. And a good constituent. And we need to think about designing for people and humanity before designing for the vehicle. So it might be a question of actually changing the bus design. But I think it's a, there's also a lot of good examples of just having good conversations with folks who might be concerned about changes to the street, like bus drivers and emergency service providers. And, you know, I think have a conversation with them about what you're trying to do, maybe have some test runs around the designs you're looking at. And I think that's a way forward.
So and they, in Santiago, we had that problem because the buses are almost independent.
Right.
Eventually we brought them up, but we asked the bus driver and they say, well, if you let me stop here and you get my passengers there, it's okay. So we hired some teenagers to walk the old people to where the bus was. And you know what happened?
What?
Teenagers got grandparents.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I never thought of that. But now the old ladies were looking for the teenagers.
Is that right?
Yeah. It, you know, and parents were coming up and said, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to my kid. Somebody could talk to him. I can't.
Right.
You're probably experiencing that now.
That's right. That's what I'm experiencing now. That's definitely true.
So actually, by doing this, you actually connect people up.
Yes.
Been on the same street for years and years. The pandemic's done it for us. We've lived here almost 20 years. And now I know my neighbors' names.
Wow. See, that's a great thing.
We live across the street from a park, but we never did it together until the law said we have to exercise in the park. So I exercise with my neighbors. Somebody brings a bagel. Somebody else brings some cheese.
And
your neighbors again.
Right. You're quarantining.
Do you use some good examples in your book? I know your father had examples, I believe, from Tokyo or someplace like that.
Yes. Yes. He had a whole list of examples that are still in the book from different parts of the world. And I actually went back and revisited some places that he wrote about in Barnsbury in England.
Yeah.
And I use examples from a lot of different places. I use a lot of NACTO design examples. You know, Portland, Oregon, Berkeley, California, England, Paris. Paris is actually doing a remarkable job right now of turning themselves into a bicycling city. So I had as my father taught me, I've traveled around and just taken a lot of pictures. So in Paris, I was riding around on the streets of Paris, capturing all the different things they're doing with bicycles.
God, he had pictures. He had pictures everywhere.
Yeah.
Trying to get to his office.
Well, you know, I now have all those slides, and there's 30 metal cases of slides.
Yeah.
It's about 14,000 slides I have in my possession. So I'm hoping to, my next book, I'm hoping to use some of those slides.
Well, I think you should, because you had great photos of people doing ordinary things.
Yeah.
Like, because you calm the street.
Yes. Well, you asked the question, what could a street be like for old and young? And you know, we really need to imagine streets. And it was really very powerful statements that he made. A very poetic voice he used as well that I tried to maintain throughout the book. And, you know, really asking us to reimagine streets, which is really a very special thing to do.
So who are some leaders in this now? You mentioned Portland. What other cities are leading this effort? New York has done a good job, actually.
New York has been doing a good job. Portland's been doing a good job. You know, I think we're working on San Diego to really get things moving in San Diego. I'd say Minneapolis has been doing a good job. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. has been doing a good job. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some nice examples from Washington, D.C. in the book.
Any outside the U.S.?
Oh, well, I mean, the ones that have really, you know, stuck out that we should be looking at. Again, I would say Paris is doing a good job. But you know, the leaders were Copenhagen and Amsterdam. And I just think their mode shares are just, you know, amazingly high compared to the U.S.
Yeah, well, they've been doing it for 50 years.
Yes, that's right. Well, I think Paris is the one who's really coming onto the scene right now. they're really, the mayor, Anne Hidalgo, is making a really concerted effort to transform the city into a 15-minute city. 15 minutes from where you live is where you can find all of your important needs met. And really adopting bicycling as a good mode of travel. And I think they're really taking off right now. And I think London, for all the constraints they have on their city streets and their very windy, narrow streets, is doing very well also.
So where do we go from here, Bruce? The pandemic will be behind us. And if it's anything like the Second World War, you want to forget what it was like.
Yeah.
And move back to the comfortable stuff. And it took Eisenhower to say, no, this ain't right. We got to do some things to make a better country. And I think Biden's saying the same thing. We'll know whether there's any infrastructure bill.
Yes, right. Well, I think we need to talk seriously about a bike superhighway network, similar to what we did for freeways and interstate highway system. I think we need to talk seriously about putting in that kind of infrastructure in place so that we can actually really encourage bicycling. And I think the promise of electric bikes is such that it could really expand to include many more people in bike riding. I think we also need to consider making sure that we're stopping sprawl and single family zoning, and really sort of mixing our uses so people have the ability to reach important destinations in a much easier fashion. And I think San Diego is actually a really interesting case study in all this, because it's really freeway rich in San Diego. A lot of interstates throughout the region, but there's a lot of pockets of pedestrian activity and walkability that if we can sort of like reconnect these different villages and neighborhoods in San Diego by a bike superhighway system and better land use planning, I think we can go a long way. So I think that's
what would a bike superhighway look like? Would it look like a big street, or would it be passy? Would it look like?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, bike superhighway might not be the right term. What I mean is basically bike connectivity through a region. Okay. So it's basically making sure you've got good protected bike lanes, but also reworking a lot of the intersections. Mm-hmm. When we have these freeways like we do in San Diego, we've got all these big, massive, high-speed interchanges that need to be navigated. And I think what we need to do is think about the bike infrastructure package that I'm thinking about really sort of reimagines these intersections, these interchanges, in a way that bicyclists can navigate easily without, and really sort of turn things around in that fashion. Mm-hmm. And I think e-bikes make a big, really are much more, can draw a bigger audience to the biking crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to think about this going forward.
An idea just struck me. You know, we're putting these here in Australia, and I think the States and Colorado and places, for the bears and animals to go under the freeways to connect their ecosystems. We could have a bike ecosystem.
We could. I think that's a really good way of putting it.
So you go under the street or under the highway or a little bridge that goes over it. And it wouldn't take very much to do that. Certainly, if you can put a light rail down the middle of it, you could put a bike lane there.
That's right. I think I like that, the bike ecosystem. That's what we should be thinking about that.
Yeah. John Rennie? Professor John Rennie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. John and I are good friends.
Well, John was thinking about doing that in New Orleans when we were there.
Is that right? Oh, wow.
And we achieved some of it. Like, we had bike-only streets.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And people lived on those streets had to have a place to park off the street. Right.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. That's what I think we need to do. And I think that our infrastructure bill needs to kind of put that kind of money, put that interstate highway kind of money into this new bike ecosystem that I think I love that name.
Inner city biking system. I got it.
That's right. The inner city. That's good.
Because you're connecting up cities. Cities aren't that far apart.
That's right.
And it'd be easy to ride from, say, San Diego to Carlsbad.
Yep, that's right. And the weather's not bad here for it. So
there's and the weather's not bad. Yeah. Well, we're putting one around the harbor here.
Yeah. The problem with San Diego is every driver you encounter has likely just been on the freeway moments earlier. So they're driving in sort of fast driving mode. So I think part of the bike ecosystem should be to try to moderate driver behavior so it's not always in the freeway mode. And the book in the part three, The Promise of Our Streets, really talks about different strategies to build up that bike ecosystem.
Good. Your publisher is?
Elsevier.
Elsevier. And when you send me your notice, send me the whole thing so we can put it on the air.
Oh, of course.
Get some more buyers of the book. None of us academics, listeners, make money from our books.
Yes, that's right. Doesn't cover the coffee we drink.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But it helps us get tenure.
Yes.
And that's worth something. Is your wife still teaching?
My wife right now is not teaching.
Well, let's keep in touch now, re-in touch. I think the last time I saw you were about 5 years old.
Right. I knew how to run around the department.
Yes. And so let's make sure that I get to know you more and better and spend more time. And interestingly enough, this new technology have made relationships better in a sense. You know, you'd wait to see somebody every 3 or 4 years.
That's right.
So let's make the air lanes and the bike lanes together.
I will. That sounds great, Ed. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
To make sure you don't miss any of this series, subscribe to Pacific Conversations wherever you find the podcast and check out the website edtalks.com.au for more information. For weekly US news and current affairs, check out Ed and I's other podcast, US of Ed, also wherever you find good podcasts.